Bill Marland. This recording is part of the oral history project carried out by the Suffolk Horse Society in 2013 with advice from Cambridge Community Heritage and a generous grant from the Heritage Lotteries Fund. In the recording, you will hear the voice of Bill Marland describing his memories of the Suffolk Punch Heavy Horse. Bill is a retired horseman and agricultural lecturer. The recording was made by Jeff Hallett, who is a member of the Suffolk Horse Society. The date of the recording was the 18th of July 2013, and it was carried out at his home in Ike. The duration of the recording is about 40 minutes. The recording starts with Bill describing some photographs.
You might pick up an idea that you want to elaborate on.
Sure will.
That was Charity Farm at Otley. They wanted to meet a hare of the beans because that was such a thin crop they didn't run through with a tractor.
All right.
And there was only about 4 acres, so it didn't take long.
And is that...
Candy.
That's Candy. Yeah. Candy was the one you did a lot with, wasn't it?
Yeah, she was. And that's the pair at Joe Arben's working weekend, I think that was.
Was it? Yeah, I can see it could well have been the steam engine there. Logging.
Yes, Barham Woods. We spent a week in there with 2 horses clearing it. Mm-hmm. You can see what sort of stuff we were dragging out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went to Nigel Oakley's and he'd got this old combine going and they were supposed to have a vintage tractor and trailer appear.
Yeah.
And that broke down on the way, so I said, well, I'll cart it with the horse and cart. Yeah, silly bee, you won't get a stallion near a combine.
Yeah.
We worked all day at it.
Did you?
Yeah. That's another. We had some students come from the Forestry Commission to learn how to drag the timber, and that's what we'd been dragging. That's Otley, somebody wanted.
When you were doing the training?
Yes.
Because you trained there, didn't you?
That's right. Well, I'd got the facilities there, the big barn, third of an acre. You hadn't got to worry about the horses getting away then, with the beginners.
No.
Oh, that was just before we moved here, 4 of the Suffolks that we'd got at the time.
What was your job at Otley College?
Agricultural lecturer.
Agricultural lecturer, that's right. And then you ran the heavy horse course.
When they shut the college, I would have the barn for the fortnight then while they're on Easter holiday and Christmas and things like that.
That's right.
Yeah, couldn't do it harvest time because we'd still got combine to do.
There you are with some logs.
Yeah, that was at Otley. That was at the Railway Museum at Weatherden, the narrow gauge railway.
Ah.
And they wanted somebody to cut the milk churns to and from the station as the train come in and out. That was Byron, champion of Norfolk.
Norfolk show. Oh,
yeah.
Because that was when he was a stallion.
Yes.
So that's Otley again.
Danish students. We had a load of them come over. Kept in touch for several years, but that gradually get dwindled. They used to send Christmas cards and that like.
Yeah, there you are again with decorated harness.
Yeah. 283 brasses on that.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. Used to take me about 12 hours to clean it.
I think so.
Yeah. Ryder Davis and myself revived that.
Yeah.
Discussed it one day and had a chat. Oh, we made a film for Anglia TV.
Logging it again. But...
yeah, they wanted, over here somewhere, 3 fields away, they wanted to build a sleeper bridge over the ditch. That was a public footpath. And they couldn't get there with machinery because the farmer wouldn't allow any marks on the wheat.
Right.
So we had to go round the footpath. Well, I could get round the footpath with that. That was him, champion again somewhere.
It looks a bit like Norfolk.
Norfolk, yeah.
There you are again. That's another...
that's Suffolk show because the rosette's a different shape, isn't it?
I
think that's coned, isn't it? Yeah. They have different... type of rosette.
Cups.
Yeah, they're the 2 he won that day.
Yeah.
That was the first Woodbridge show we ever went to. He was only about 3 years old, and we put him in a tumble.
Yeah.
He was a stallion, and
yeah.
thought I'd see it going, and Suffolk Show wouldn't allow us to go in with it. Wouldn't allow a stallion in the ring with a vehicle.
Oh, they wouldn't?
No.
Yeah.
So I didn't go the next year, and I altered the entries, and we were able to enter after that. Well, I thought, if you're up here, you might as well earn the money, mightn't you? That's the village sign in Willisham.
Yeah.
Thatcher and a pair of horses ploughing, because that was, we looked back 100 years and there was no trades as such other than thatching in the village.
And that's Joe's wagon there, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hadley.
Yeah, that's nice.
John Kerrs went there one day and he got all these wagons out. I said, why ain't you got your wagon? He said, I ain't got anybody to drive me a horse.
Well,
I said, well, I'll put Victor in if you like.
Yeah.
So we did.
Such a shame they sold that wagon.
Yes.
They ended up having to, getting another one for one of the girls' weddings.
Stupid. Yeah, our daughter went to church in our wagon. We still got it as such.
Have you still got it? Is that the one with the wooden axles?
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, very special that is. Nicely done up. You and your proper gear as well.
Well, I can scrub up sometimes.
That's right. Lovely. Yeah.
And the mare had got a foal.
Oh.
Well, that was only a quarter of a mile away from the church, so she'd have heard it shrieking, wouldn't she, after a time.
That's right.
So she stood there about an hour and a quarter.
Yeah.
And I got the boy to bring the foal across and stay with her.
Yeah, good. Yeah. No, it's nice having them like that, isn't it?
Yeah, just a record and
that's very welcome. Now I've got me your proper address, I've got your phone number. Do you mind if I have your date of birth, Bill?
3rd of August 1937.
Yeah. And what, you know, we these interviews are being collected together, and then we keep them, and then we'll edit them a bit so that we can take bits out if we want to. We'll also keep the originals, and then we can make up a like a presentation with different people's things in, and also we can then have some transcripts and produce one or two articles to go in the Horse magazine and things as well.
Yes. Yep.
And we can make them available in due course for people who, like schools or museums or just people in the future, and they'll be digitally done, which means, well, that's all the rage now anyway, rather than be on tape, they'll
yes.
be on, so they can be put on computers and things.
Yep.
So it should all be available for folk
right.
over in the coming years. And
yes, because once we get another 10 years, there won't be many of us left, will there?
Well, there won't be really, no. I'm afraid. And Neil Lanham has done a lot of recording of horsemen and things, and those are, so those are tapes, and he's actually helping us a bit as well, so I've got,
bit
him,
of guidance.
On, got him on the side, which is a good thing. And
yep.
We'd planned to, we're supposed to have it all done by the end of the year, so it's quite a lot to do, but we will have a presentation for somewhere like the Trinity Rooms, you know,
oh,
on the showground, get everyone together and have a bit of music as well, and have a bit of food and that sort of thing. So they have what they call a celebration of the whole thing. This is the lottery fund. People are keen that, you know, the people really do these things and then make it known they've done them.
Oh, I see, yeah.
So that's quite handy.
So they see where the money's spent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, did you come from a horse-type family?
Yes. What father, before he started farming, was head horseman at Potterstile.
Potterstile?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he used to keep pigs as a sideline in a redundant set of buildings until he got enough to start farming.
Right. And did you... So you came across horses when you were really quite young then?
8 months old.
8 months?
I was tied on top of the horse.
Yeah.
And apparently when they were horse hoeing, 10th of April, 1938, they left me in the pram and I went... Mother was leading the horse, father horse hoeing at the back, and I started crying, so he had the bright idea, which is the sort of thing he would do, is tied me up behind the sails or hames. and put his belt round me, and that's where I sat till lunchtime. After lunch,
you could see what was going on.
They put me in the pram, and I soon protested. So they tied me up again, and I rode 6 days a week till the middle of September, I was told.
Yeah.
So I didn't know anything else. I could ride before I could walk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never saw any fear of them either, I suppose. That's what does it, isn't it? I was 8 months old, and then when I was 4 years old, I was G-up boy in the harvest field, just to go from one shop to the next while they were carting the corn. But for some reason, the wagon had got to go back to the farmyard, and there was nobody there who father would trust to take it. And that was only a matter of, down the hill and up, past Water Run Farm, half a mile, I suppose. And he sent me with it, and I was only four. And I can remember being petrified going through the first gateway, because there were only 8 foot gates.
Yeah.
Now everything is 12, 14 foot. And I, you know, but the horse knew exactly where to go, and I suppose I guided it, or thought I did.
Were you leaving or were you driving?
I was sitting up top.
You were sitting?
Oh, yes. I couldn't walk hard enough to keep up with them, because that was downhill, you see. They get a move on with a load, and then they go faster than ever to get up the next hill, because that was down and up. I don't suppose that was more than 200 foot from top to bottom, but that's quite a slope. And into the stackyard, beside the stack, for them to unload. And of course, when I'd done it once, I had to do it the rest of the harvest then. Yeah. And then at 5 years old, I progressed to horse raking.
Yeah.
And I'd got, well, I call her my favourite horse. It was always the first one, at Violet. She was a small Suffolk, more like Candy than anything. And I was horse raking the stubbles, because all the fields had to be horse raked them days, just in case there was a little corn left in them.
Yeah.
And at 6 years old, I progressed to a pair of horses, thought I was doing wonders, and I was on a potato spinner. And the women in the village used to come and pick. They'd have 20 yards each across the field, and you had to go round, wait for them to more or less finish, and then you go round again. So it was quite a bit of just sitting still on the potato spinner with a pair of horses. Father would sort of tell me how wonderful I'd done to get me to do it again, I suppose. He couldn't get my brother to do it, though. He never wanted to be with horses, and he always said when he left school he would never come on the land, and he didn't either. I think he may have been a lot financially better off than me, but I don't think he was any happier for it. Yeah. And at 7 years old, I carried on doing these various tasks, mostly alone due to the shortage of labour. He'd send me harrowing in the field, and he'd come and get me when it was time to leave off, make sure I'd hooked on properly or unhooked it, whatever the case may be. And sometimes he'd be a bit late, so I suppose I had to do a bit more, but that used to rankle then. I was getting tired at that age to walk all day on a rough field. That was during World War II. Sadly, my education suffered. During the sort of middle 40s to late 40s, you were allowed a lot of time off. If a thrashing engine was on the farm, that was accepted, you didn't go to school.
Right.
And teachers never said anything about it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we used to have the thrashing engine quite a lot. Potato harvest, you didn't have to go to school. And I used to sit a pair of horses and spin the potatoes out. 1943, I met the first land girls come to the farm, and father brought, I hadn't better say the name, had her children are still alive, brought this land girl, and he said, you can come off that horse rake, he said, and let Darkie do it. That was her nickname. And I thought, damn me, that's the only horse I like using, because word of mouth, she'd do anything I wanted her to. Anyhow, I got off, she got on the seat, and she couldn't have gone 20 yards. And she got a fly on her stomach. They used to get just below the shaft where the sweat was.
Yeah.
And she kept fidgeting about. I could see what was going to happen. She laid down in the shafts. Because I used to flick the plough line, father had taught me, to move the fly. Well, she didn't know that. We talked about scream and shout and go ahead. You better get back on there, he said. I thought, lovely. I must have been a bit mean as a 7-year-old, I think, but I was quite happy to carry on. Education being the school teacher, whenever he went back to school, whether I'd been away 3 days or 3 weeks, never any questions as to what you'd been doing, because I weren't the only one.
Yeah.
You know, there was other farmers' sons at school, only about 4 of us, all in the same boat. In 1943, I started to cart water to the steam engine when they were thrashing, and I would cart one load of water and one tumbleful of coal, and then I'd go and get another butt of water. It'd be dinner time by then, because I had to back the water butt into the pond, stand on a log to fill it, and when I got it full, shut it up, and then hope that the horse didn't jerk forward too quick, otherwise I'd lose half my water. So that was a bit of a job, and that was quite a steep hill out of the pond, so she'd got to get a move on, but that used to peeve me a bit. I used to 3/4 fill it, and then I found if I left a big lump of wood in it and then shut the lids, I didn't lose so much water. Well, to me it was a big lump of wood, I suppose today that was only been about the size of his tabletop. And 1948 we had an ex-prisoner of war, Italian chap, and he came to work for Father full time when they disbanded the camps. And I remember one job we had was scooping horse scuffling, I don't know what you call it, the beans, 1 row at a time, 4-acre field. And come lunchtime, we all stopped at 12. We got one more round to go on the outside, which was usually a beggar because there's a lot of grass and that take a long while. So I went home, got wrong for leaving off too soon. In 1949, I'd been 12, and I was set to plough, and the 4-acre field, same one the beans were in, he'd set the tops, opened up the furrows and set the top, and he told me if I finished ploughing, I could finish for the week. This was Monday morning, and I was 12. I was determined to get finished on Friday rather than Saturday, because I worked all day Saturdays then still. Anyhow, he went off to market Thursdays, regular as clockwork, about 11 o'clock. So I slipped home, got his yard horse, put the young one I was working with in the stable, because that was all sweating up, I couldn't stick it. Went to plough till about 3. That was only guesswork, because I hadn't got a watch. Took his horse back, put it in the stable, and took my young one back on the plough. When I went into tea, he said, I don't know what's the matter with Vista, she's all sweated up. I said, it must be because we took others away and she ain't got no company. Well, he knew damn well what I'd done. But he had the last laugh, because Thursday morning he come across, he said, tie them up to the holly tree. He said, I want you to come back to the farm. And there was a new standard Fordson tractor and a cockshut plough. So I didn't plough with horses anymore. No, we drove it off the lorry, ran the pond in the meadow, crossed and carried on ploughing with it, and that was all tuition I had, about 10 minutes to drive a tractor, but because I weren't big enough or old enough to start it, if that conked out, I had to get Father to come and start it, because I was a beggar for kicking back.
Yeah. 1954,
finished my housework. RAF service called. Only went in for national service. Come out in 1956. First thing I done was go back in the stables as I got out of the taxi at the farmyard gate. Went into the stables first. No horses. I was gutted. Harness hung there full of cobwebs. When I went indoors, I got told, you think more of them be horses than you do of your family. Yes, the horses had all gone. So I purchased my first horse, was a yearling colt, bred by Roger Clark, although I didn't buy it off him because he'd parted with it to somebody else at 8 Ash Green, and they couldn't handle it. He's a little bit stroppy. Then I took Philip Hutchinson with me. He said, oh, I think that'll do you all right. Mm-hmm. So we had it, but because he was never quite big enough for a stallion, not when you stood in line with others.
Yeah.
He could have done with being another half hand higher, but we got a champion or two with him.
Yeah.
During the following years, from then till now, we had several Suffolks bought, quite a few foals, colt foals usually, brought them on. We sent, well, didn't send it, they came and had a look. The Bavarian International Equestrian Centre were riding round this county looking for stallions to take over there, and Philip Morley rung Patricia up. He said, I've got the Bavarian people here. He said, well, they can't find a colt they like anywhere. They've been to Holsley Bay. He said, everywhere they've been, they don't like what they see. He said, you've got two. Can they come and look at yours? Mm. I thought, well, yes, you're only just doing that to get rid of them. But anyhow, they came and I liked both of them. So I thought, well, I reckon I want £2,000 for them two. And they were yapping away. And they reckoned they were worth 3,000. What they didn't realise was I could speak German then, because we'd had the prisoners, and you pick up a splattering, don't you?
Sure.
So when they wanted them run out then, so I got one in each hand, two colts, up and down, no problem. And they were yapping away. Never seen two stallions led by one person before, but because they'd been together all their life, hadn't they? And then we got round to talk money. I said, well, I can't take less than 3,000, it's got to be more. And they couldn't shake my hand quick enough. So I thought, well, that German has done me a little bit of good today. And I said, you take over from now. Any veterinary inspections you want or anything done, you'll be paying for. They're yours as of now. And it's a good job I did, because one didn't pass the veterinary. He'd go and got one stone down.
Right.
So we cut him, or the Hadley vets did, and a chap at Cambridge, he watched us at the Suffolk show. We got him in the harness class, and he was the biggest Suffolk I ever had. He was 18 too.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd never had one that size before, or since, really. I don't know what I want, but we had him in the harness class, and I got back from the show, I think it was about Friday, phone went, chap at Cambridge, got a small farm. Would I sell him? I said, well, come and have a look at him, see what you think. He said, I've seen him. He said, I watched you 2 days. He said, I come back to the Suffolk show second day just to watch him.
Mm.
And when he come to the farm, he was about that height. About, his head was about level with my shoulder. I thought, well, you'll never reach him to put a collar on. But luckily, I taught him to put his head down, because even for me, he was tall. Mm. And this old chap, he held the collar and the horse just pushed his head in it.
Mm.
So he was well away. Anyhow, they took him on the Wednesday, and I said, I'll come over on the Saturday and we'll go round the farm, what do you want to do? And he'd got seven little areas of grass all round the village. He'd have the football pitch, the cricket pitch, and different bits and pieces he grazed with sheep. And he said, I keep getting on and off a tractor and trailer. He said, no, I don't want to do that. I said, well, you need him. I said, with the horse, you stop at the gate, you open the gate, tell him to walk on, stop him in the corral, because he got double gates everywhere. And then open that one, let him walk out, then shut the gates. Well, he said, that's easy enough. But because the first time he tried it, he stopped too quick. So he shut the gate, and the gate was pushing the tumble. I said, all you're going to do now is smash your gate. He said, how? I said, well, the horse will wriggle. I said, you've got that up tight to the tumble. I said, you want to just tell him to step up, and then he'll move, go one step. So he did, and he got away with it. And we went round the village, these seven different paddocks he'd got, feeding these sheep. We went back to his buildings, and we must have got within a couple hundred yards, we could see him. He said, I think that'll do. So I said, home. And we got just in the farmyard. He said, oh, he said, I'll just go up the village. And I said, you won't get him out now. Of course I will, he said. If you just took him out, I said, you won't. I said, I told him he'd go home. I said, and when I send a horse home, it always has a reward. I always give them only a handful of meal in the manger, just so they know they're done right. And he tried, he couldn't get him out. So he had to admit that he'd made the mistake. He said, I shan't make that mistake. And he said, I shan't stay home till I know I've finished using them. We sold various ones abroad, and at the moment we've got Watton Falcon 4 years old. We lost Candy, and I felt lost without a horse. You know what it's like. There's nothing to get up for, is there?
No.
But he seems to be doing all right. We don't do a lot with him, a bit of chain hiring and log pulling. I don't know if there's anything else you'd like to know.
Well,
some of the best days we had out is power of the past. We used to take Candy and Humbug and quite look forward to that.
Yeah.
Have a little corral, we could leave them in at night and knew they were content. I used to sleep there in the trailer at the time. And we used to go several years running. Stone Market Museum used to have a working weekend. Mm-hmm. Had a bit of land and grew some wheat. And they'd have the steam engine going. We'd cart the wheat down to the water mill and the chaff back up to the yards for their horses during the winter. The engine driver thought he'd be clever one day. Candy stood beside the wheel and he blew the whistle. He was expecting her to run away and she just sort of looked at him and said, "What's that for?" And she didn't bat an eyelid. She was virtually, you can't say bomb-proof, because I don't think any horse is 100% bomb-proof, but 99% anyhow. Mm. Yeah, and she didn't worry. And they tried that at the railway museum as well, blowing the whistle. That, you know, they just thought that was being funny, I suppose, but she never worried. She weren't tied up. She just stood beside the engine. The engine driver could have leant out and touched her. She was that close, because they were putting the churns on and off. But I was lucky there, I suppose. That was one of Bruce Smith's mares.
Yeah.
When I went to buy her, he'd got three in the meadow. He said, "They're all for sale." And she came across to me. I thought, well, that'll do. She was the smallest.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I won't sell it to anybody," he said, "because she's only been in chains." He said, "But you can have her." And I found out, well, he's never had her feet picked up. You talk about having a job.
Really?
We had to rope her up to get her feet off the ground. And luckily, I was a lot younger then, and we took about 3 hours, I think, to do 4 feet. Got them up, done them, and the next time I went to do them, she'd give them to me. She didn't want to go through that again.
Yeah,
she knew that was, she'd got this yield. But I think what had happened, somebody had tried to put her in shafts, and she'd stood on the shaft and that had snapped, because you couldn't back her into shafts. All her life, she never forgot it.
No.
We used to have to pull the cart to her.
Yeah.
She was all right then, but you couldn't get her to back into shafts, and I think that's what must have happened.
Mm.
But you never know when you buy slightly older animals what they've been through, do you?
That's right. You won't quite start them off.
Yeah.
What was the, when you were doing the farm work, you know, with your father and that, what was the working day?
We would have breakfast at 7. He would have milked the house cows by then.
Mm.
Wartime, I used to have to milk as well, one of the quieter cows. Breakfast at 7, out at 8:30. The employees would be there then at 8:30.
Mm.
And you carry on, and we'd stop at 12 till 1 for lunch. And
so
he was,
when were the horses fed?
Well, he would feed them before breakfast, so they were fed round about 5:30 to 6.
Yeah.
And then they would get a quick groom for 30 minutes. And then he'd feed the cattle, or we'd feed them at 7:30, depending on what time of the winter it was, how many were in and that like. And none of the men fed cattle unless, for some reason, somebody was ill.
Mm.
If father was ill, he did have a bout in bed with, I think it was rheumatic fever. And then we all had to muck in. The men were asking me what different things had, but we used to mix the pig food up in big tubs, soak the meal. And because I weren't big enough to lift the bags in, so the men had to lift them in, but I knew what to do and they didn't. So between us, we got there and nothing starved. We managed to feed everything. But they were long days, 5 o'clock. And Saturdays, we used to leave off at 5. And I can remember it coming to 12 o'clock when we thought it was wonderful getting Saturday afternoon off.
Yeah.
I think we must have been a little bit behind the times because apparently that had been in a year before we started doing it.
And Sunday you would be off?
No, never had a Sunday off because stock got to be fed in.
Well, how did you feed? But the animals didn't do any work then, the horses?
No, they didn't do any work, but they were still fed.
They still had to be fed, yeah.
Right. Horses were still brushed down if they were in to work.
Right.
Yeah. So Sunday was, we'd usually get finished about 11 o'clock Sunday morning, and we didn't have to do anything else till 4 o'clock. So I used to, as a young lad, walk to Stalin Parva, across the fields, about a mile and a quarter, go to the shop and get either a few cigarettes or sweets or something like that, just to get away, I suppose, and come back 4 o'clock, we'd start feeding, collecting eggs and things like that again, and usually finish about 5:30. So that was just a few hours on a Sunday. But I've never ever had a Christmas day off.
No.
And when I worked for other people, that was the same, and that was worse than ever when I worked at Otley, because they'd got a lot of livestock and nobody'd go in Christmas Day and feed them. So Muggins went from here to feed Christmas morning. Patricia come with me in the afternoon and we'd feed them again, and that happened, you know, Christmas, Boxing Day, New Year's, because young ladies who were supposed to be stock people just didn't want to work at holiday time.
When it comes to feeding the Suffolks, what do you reckon to feed them with?
Well, at the moment we're so short of grass. I've got nearly 5 acres, and you can fill a lawnmower box with what grass there is out there. So they're still on ad lib hay. Not that they eat much, because they're picking at the grass all day. And they still have a small hard feed. They have a bowl of chaff and a bowl of hard feed I buy from High Flyers. So just to keep him ticking over, really. And he's got an old pony as a companion, belonged to a friend of ours, just 26.
Yeah.
And that has to have a bit of hard feed because he ain't got many teeth left. But they're the best of pals, so I have to shut Falcon in when I feed because he eats quicker, and then he'd go and pinch the other one's food.
Yeah.
But when I do let him out, they're licking round the bowl or like a big plastic tub. They'll both have the head in, and there's never any arguing about it. Best of buddies. I suppose a big age difference helps, doesn't it?
Yeah. Do you still feed corn chaff off the thrashing drum?
No, I don't. I usually buy Molly chaff. Proprietary brand. Well, that's easier and simpler. Last time we went to where there was a thrashing demonstration, I used to take the empty fertiliser half-ton bags and fill those and bring them back, as many as I could get in the horse box. But we haven't been for a few years.
And what about, one of the things some of the people have spoken about in the past is the old horsemen, the head horsemen, and their secrets, and their secret sort of society, and not witchcraft, but magic spells. Do you come across any of that?
No, not really, because Father used to look after the horses. He'd been horseman on a larger farm. I think it was about 400 acres, although he was a young man when he started farming himself. But I was never told anything about any of it. When he was on his sickbed, he lived about 6 months. He said, what I tell you, he said, you never tell anybody. And if you do tell them, you can't use it no more. So that was it. So there's a little something somewhere, but I've never been afraid of a horse. And I've been, the museum called me, they had a stallion up there once. For showing, they'd got some special event on, and they couldn't get near it to shoe it, that needed shoeing. So I got a phone call, would I go? And I went, and I said, well, what's the matter with it? I went in the stable, I stood there quite content. I said, well, give me a bowl of food that you normally feed it on. I said, I'll pick his feet up. So he fed it, and while that was eating, I picked all 4 feet up, banged about. He'd got a loose shoe, that's all it was.
Right.
But the blacksmith couldn't pick it. He wouldn't let the blacksmith in the stable, even. So there's something wrong somewhere.
Yeah.
Or
something to it, isn't it?
Well, there must be a little something somewhere. Yeah. I think a horse now, if you're nervous too.
Yeah. And you have come unstuck once or twice, haven't you?
I certainly have, and twice. I've got 26 broken bones and a punctured lung, and that wasn't my fault either. We had a hitch cart made, and we gave them all the measurements, and the pole, they made it about 8 inches shorter than it should have been.
Yeah.
Candy was a rather long-backed mare.
Yeah.
Humbug was all right, he could walk in the pole no problem, but Candy, her hocks hit the whipple tree.
Right.
She didn't like that, so she took off and took me with her. And I was leading Humbug, because he was the young one. I thought he would be the trouble, but because he wasn't, he was all right. And he was trying to stop her going forwards, and he bent the bars.
Yeah.
So he really was trying to prevent her running forward. And of course that put me in, the wheel bounced on my chest, and the ribs just went like dead sticks. I could hear them go, and I could see Patricia in the distance. I thought, she's going to be a widow if I'm not careful. And I had to roll as they were galloping round to get away from the wheel, and I just kept turning over and over to get away. And what had happened is, as I was leading them and they started to trot, the chain had come unhooked off a whipple tree, gone round my outside leg, and hooked itself on itself again.
Right.
You couldn't do it in if you tried 1,000 times, I doubt.
No.
Well, because I was dragged, and that put my right leg underneath Humbug's back feet. So he kept kicking my knee every time and leg he went forward. But we didn't know that was wrong until we afterwards and then measured up. So I cut it up. I wouldn't use it no more. We made a single horse hitch cart out of it. But it's a pity. If they'd have done as they were, because we went and checked the measurements, and that was the trouble there. And then we had another little spat at Woolpit. Somebody wanted us to use their tumble. We were going to give rides to the public. And they had been insisting all the season, because we'd been several different places, fates and that like, oh, why don't you use my tumble? I've had it done up. That's new. He kept on about this flaming tumble. And then when Woolpit come along, he rung up. He said, you're going to Woolpit tomorrow. He said, I've already taken my tumble there for you. Biggest mistake I ever made again. Got 12 people in the tumble. Put the grown-ups at the back and children at the front because the tumble wasn't balanced.
Yeah.
When we turned round at the bottom, they changed places, unbeknown to me. The women come to the front and children went to the back so they could still see more. Want to see more what was going on. Well, that put a lot of weight on Candy's back, and off she went. So I jumped down and, holding on the shafts, got to her head, grabbed Booth's bearing rein in one hand, and because she went up straight then and come down, and I was underneath the front feet. But I hung on to her till everybody got out, and then because when I got up and went to walk, I found I couldn't. So that was the second one. But that's always been somebody else. Well, I say somebody else's fault, but it was my fault for using a tumble.
Yeah.
I should have took my own. We'd got one specially made for it. But these things happen. But it never put me off horses because I never blamed them for it.
Well, one other thing that's come up is so many of the horsemen have ended up with playing their instruments and singing songs and telling stories. Are you a songster?
I'm about as musical as a log of dead wood.
Right.
Even at school, I remember when they used to have the carol concerts, I was told never to sing. See the old teacher there now playing the piano thing? She said, I can't get low enough on the piano for you. She said, you'll have to keep quiet. So I used to stand at the back of the choir and keep quiet. And when I was at Hunston Church, I was church warden there, and a small parish church, I only get about 5 or 6 people, and I used to pump the organ with one hand and try and sing with the other, but there were so few people that didn't matter a mite. I was making noise, that was enough. I think I enjoyed going to that church more than any, because at least I'd got something to do. take my mind off it a bit. Yeah. And there was another couple of chaps who had got a rough sort of country voice as well, if you like. So we complimented one another.
Yeah, well, I think you've covered things well. I mean, I think you nothing else particular you are thinking we should talk about. You've covered all the bits I've come across. You've done very well.